And our last headline takes us to Wall Street, where homeowners aren't the only ones suffering from the weak housing market. Now, big business is taking a hit as well, and several large funds that had invested millions in subprime lenders are feeling a little buyer's remorse. A glut of subprime defaults and foreclosures may force banks, hedge funds, and retirement funds to scale back what they're willing to put down for home loans, and that, experts say, could weigh down an already sinking housing market. For more, U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Alphonso Jackson dropped by to explain what he's doing to keep banks happy and homeowners out of foreclosure. He agreed that when it comes to housing, the number one problem out there can be summed up in two words.
Subprime loan. The subprime loans that are coming due. Last month, we had 175,000 families go into foreclosure. The only way to really address that issue is that we have before Congress now Federal Housing Administration modernization. That is to be able to help those persons who are facing these high-cost loans. Now, when I say high-cost, I'm talking about they initially got it with a teaser rate, probably 2-3%. Then in 2 years, it goes up to 10-11%. And they have a huge spike in the amount that they pay each month. And in many cases, they can't pay it. We're beginning to educate them as best we can to make sure that they stop taking these exotic loans. Some people call them suicide loans that comes due from a period of time. So we think that we can help a large number of these persons who are in this predicament now.
One more thing in this area. Do you penalize the institutions that are making these subprime loans, or do you work more with the potential home buyers in terms of how to better handle their finances and put them in the appropriate kinds of property?
It's the latter. We work with the homeowner. What we have done since President Bush has been president, when we walked in, we had a housing counseling budget of $13 million. This 208 budget, we have $50 million. We are counseling more people now. It takes a little longer period of time, but they understand the fine prints that they when they decide to sign their contract.
Given the state of the economy, given some of the issues surrounding housing, particularly as it relates to some of these kinds of predatory mortgages, is it no longer part of the American dream?
You know, I quote often my mom and my dad, Tony, because I'm the last of 12 kids, so I always say that I got the wisdom the other 11 miss. And my mom used to say all the time, it might be insane to live with a dream, but it is madness to live without one. And that's why I think if you want to own a home, we should do everything in our power to help you own a home, but do it right.
Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. The last time that you and I talked in February or so, one of the concerns that you had at that time was Section 8.
Yes.
And that you felt that reform in Section 8 was definitely needed. Bring us up to date on where that reform effort is and how you are protecting both the people who qualify for Section 8 and the landowners who get into Section 8 contracts with the government.
We're not doing very well on the legislation. What we see more than anything else is the cost of the Section 8 voucher is going up, but we're not serving any more people. And that's the real problem. So every year the budget for Section 8 grows, but we're serving the same people. You have to understand what the Section 8 voucher program started out as. It was the transition between public housing and market rate housing. Now it has become a subset of public housing. People stay there as long as they were staying in public housing. And I don't think that's a good quality. We should let people come in and move out, give them an opportunity to get their finances together and move out. But that's not the case, and I will continue to fight for the reform.
Are people abusing it?
In many cases, yes. And the industry groups get very angry with me when I tell them that. But see, the one thing I have of all of the other HUD secretaries, I'm the only one that's ever ran a housing authority. I know the process and what has occurred. If you do the necessary checks on people, you'll find out we used to do it every 90 days, and we would probably take off 300-400 people off the roll. See, I ran the housing authority in St. Louis and D.C. and in Dallas. And so when they say it's not an abuse, I said that it is abuse. And I would say, if I would speculate, probably 20-22% of the people on the Section 8 program shouldn't be there. But those who need to be there, I'm all for it, but we need to begin to help them find solutions so they won't be there in perpetuity.
There's a new area that's emerging, Secretary, with regard to mortgage and the potential for mortgage abuses, and it's in reverse mortgages. We had on our show earlier yesterday an economist who talked about a study that was just published about the volatility of income and how it drops precipitously and how people generally, when that occurs, will turn to equity in their property. And now in the case of senior citizens, they will turn to equity in their property to live their lives out through these reverse mortgages. How concerned are you, sir, about the dangers, if any, that reverse mortgages are presenting for an aging population?
I'm really in favor of reverse mortgages because many of our seniors can't live off of their Social Security or their retirement income. And when they're dealing with reputable banks like Wells Fargo, Chase, Citibank, there's really no problem at all with those loans. And I'd much rather for them to deal with those banks than they get into that subprime market, too, where they think they have to go with some mortgage insurer. And in fact, I was responsible for my sister and brother-in-law having a reverse mortgage, and it's working very well for them.
Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about New Orleans. I'd like you to tell us the last time that you were there, what you saw, and the status of the development and the building of affordable homes for people who want to return. As you know, earlier in the year, there was some controversy involving Ray Nagin, who said that you made some promises to him and that they weren't kept. And you and I said, no, you told me that, yes, they were, that you had built, I think, 2,000 units at the time. Where does it stand now with regard to the availability of affordable housing for people in New Orleans?
It is finally began. We're finally beginning to see the change. In fact, I was just there 2 weeks ago, and I was pleased to see that many of the houses that were over in the lower ninth are being raised, the lands are clear, people are going to rebuild. Secondly, we did keep our commitment and continue to keep our commitment. We have almost developed 2,500 public housing units for people to come back to in New Orleans, and we promised the judge in the case that we'd have 3,000 by August, and we will. So we're doing everything in our power to help bring people back to New Orleans. And I think if you ask the mayor now, he'll tell you that we have kept our commitment and will continue to do that.
What about the quality of this housing that's being provided?
It is good quality. Where we're rehabbing, we're doing that temporarily until we begin to build the new public housing. And with the affordable housing, we have a number of builders who had affordable housing there that are beginning to rebuild at this point in time. It's taken quite a bit of time because we have not had the best cooperation from the state.
As you look at your tenure, as we bring our conversation to a close, and I really do appreciate, again, your coming in, as you look at your tenure so far as the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, what particularly did you want to accomplish, and what particularly did you accomplish?
And I think that's a fair question. The one thing, when I was asked to become the Secretary, that I promised the President is that HUD was viewed as a second-rate agency because we could not manage ourselves very well. And I promised the president that I would get us off the high-risk list, and the high-risk list is like a death wish list. Well, as of 2 months ago, the agency came off. It's a top-A agency at this point in time. And the director of the General Accounting Office said he was very pleased with what I had done, and I kept my word to him. So to me, that was very important. Now, HUD had been on that list since 1994, and that's 13 years ago that we were on that list.
I don't know if there is a good answer to this question or not, but given the volatility within the administration, within certain departments, justice, for example, where the alleged politicization of it has become an issue, in your department, how have you, if you have been able to, draw the line between providing the service that you intended and wanted and the politics of your position?
First of all, I work at the pleasure of the president. The president sets the agenda and the goal for housing and urban development. I implement those goals and decisions. I believe that any one of the Schedule C's, any one of the assistant secretaries, we work at the pleasure of the president. If he wants our resignation, we should give him our resignation without any problem at all. And that's the way it works. You know when you walk in there, you're not a permanent employee for housing and urban development.
How has the change in Congress affected your ability to do your job?
Well, I have a lot more hearings. But I'm getting along with our current chairman, Congressman Bonnie Franks and our sub-chairman, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, we're getting along very well.
Well, everybody can't say that.
Well, I can.
So, Secretary, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Alfonso Jackson is U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Oh, 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 oh